Welcome to the Aligned Musician Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly Hankins, and I'm a violist as well as a yoga and breathwork facilitator. I created this podcast to empower musicians like you to find your own path towards healing and normalize conversations around musicians' wellness. I'm so grateful for your support and thank you for joining me. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode. I am so excited to share with you the conversation I had with Melissa White and Elena Uriosti of Intermission. Intermission is a groundbreaking program that combines body, mind, breath, and music making through yoga and meditation. Intermission is comprised of sessions for students, retreats for professionals, and an app for absolutely everyone. Their hope is that through exploring mindful movement, alignment, breathwork, and self-compassion, musicians of all ages and stages can begin to unite their physical, mental, and emotional selves so that music making may become a more holistic, healthy, and joyful practice. I'm so inspired by what they're doing with yoga for musicians, but also their incredible violinists and international soloists in their own right. Melissa is a first prize laureate in the Sphinx competition, and she's received critical acclaim for her solo performances with some of America's leading ensembles, including the Cleveland Orchestra, the Boston Pops, Detroit Symphony, Atlanta Symphony, Pittsburgh Symphony, and more. She's also a founding member of the Grammy Award-winning Harlem Quartet, and so she's appeared in many of the country's most prestigious venues, including Carnegie Hall and the White House. She's performed internationally. And Elena was a BBC Radio 3 New Generation artist from 2012 to 14. She's also a first place laureate of the Sphinx competition. She's given acclaimed performances with major orchestras internationally, including the Philadelphia Orchestra, the Cleveland Orchestra, Minnesota Orchestra, LA, New York Phil, so many more. And she also runs her own chamber music festival. And just wow, they are such inspiring, incredible humans and musicians. And it was such an honor to chat with them about everything that led them to create Intermission and their thoughts about these intersections between mindfulness and movement and music making. Interestingly enough, all three of us had the same entry point into yoga, which was through a practice called Bikram yoga. And this particular practice, I really enjoyed because it's in a hot room. You do a lot of stretching, especially in the upper body. And for me, when I was recovering from an injury, I felt that it was a huge reason why I was able to get back to playing faster. That being said, Bikram is a problematic human and teacher. And I think that if you are interested in this practice at all and want to pursue it, that you seek out studios that no longer support Bikram. And I think that if you're interested in yoga, you should try everything that's out there with different teachers before passing judgment about any particular practice. I really encourage you to check out Intermission's sessions. They've been offering some online yoga sessions from time to time. And if you follow them on their Instagram, which is at Intermission Sessions, you can find some of their classes that are donation-based. I also highly recommend their app, which is just Intermission app, and you can find that on Apple products. As always, please let us know if you have any questions. And without any further ado, here is the episode. Hi, Elena and Melissa. Thank you so much for being here. I think I found you on Instagram and I've been a fan of yours for the last year at least, just following your journey and everything you do with Intermission Sessions. And just, yeah, I'm so honored for you to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Hi, Kim. It's nice to meet you. And hi, all of your listeners. Thanks for listening in and having us. Yeah.
So I know that you've probably told this story before at some point in some version, but what is your musician's wellness journey and how did you end up creating intermission sessions? And I know maybe this is a question that you both can kind of answer a little bit. Right. I've never had multiple guests on the show, so feel free to take your time.
Sure. I'll start us off. So we individually came to a yoga practice at actually similar times in our lives. We met very early on in undergrad. I was already at the Curtis Institute of Music, and then Elena joined, and we quickly became friends. We became even better friends when we would tour with the Sphinx Virtuosi. And it was after our undergrad that I started to go to yoga, which was recommended to me by my violin teacher getting my master's degree at the New England Conservatory of Music. And so he asked if I was experienced with any yoga, and I said, no, it's not quite for me. But I had a friend going to a particular hot yoga class, and she invited me. So I said, okay, fine. And I went, and it was a set sequence, 26 postures, 2 breathing exercises. And I absolutely loved it. I loved that you did everything twice. So immediately you got to see a difference, and even if it was worse, you just got to do it again and try something immediately for a second time. So anyways, I stuck with it. And so I started to go, and I could go anywhere in the world and it was the same. So that was something I loved. And then Elena and I met back up years later. Fast forward, we were chatting and found we had both come to the same set sequence practice and we loved it. And so that's when we started talking about all of the wonderful benefits that it brought to our violin playing. So on stage, also in the practice room, just being able to really focus, being able to feel comfortable in our body and strong. And we thought about what if we had had this all these years before when we were younger doing all the practicing. And so we became roommates in New York City. And so at our dinner table, we would just jot down notes about how we could start a program that would incorporate yoga. And so lots of things went into a notebook. Lots of things were maybe not the ideas we wanted to pursue after all, but what came to be was intermission. And it started as just a retreat that we ran for professional musicians. So it's now grown and become a beautiful community, which is really the best part. And we also host sessions for students.
I don't have that much to add, just to my own yoga story. It was funny. Melissa and I have been oddly synced our whole lives, like for even, you know, decades longer than we knew each other in person. But we started playing the violin because of the same episode of Sesame Street. And it was really funny that we came to this hot yoga practice during the same exact summer, even though we were living in two different cities. I went for non-musical reasons. I sensed that a very physical, sweaty version of yoga would resonate with me, and it definitely did. And I loved just how strong and empowered it made me feel in my own body, maybe for the first time ever. I loved how it sort of wrung me out, how exhausted I felt afterwards. It really felt like all my effort was for something. And pretty much within a few days, I started noticing the impact of this practice on my music making. And so that was sort of the topic of many conversations over the years. And then, yes, as she said, over the dinner table, we bounced around a lot of ideas, but mostly it was that we wished that we'd had something in our formative years of training, you know, when we were practicing 4, 5, 6 hours a day, which is something I would say neither of us do anymore. But when we were practicing that much, just having some sort of practice to help us with body awareness, with self-compassion, and just a general sense of mindfulness and care for ourselves. So that was our primary goal in starting intermission. We didn't know exactly what form it would take, but we knew we wanted to share all of these wonderful things we were learning in yoga classes with students and colleagues.
Oh, that's so amazing. My first yoga experience was with that same set sequence too, in the hot yoga. And when I found it, I was dealing with shoulder tendonitis, and it just helped me feel so much more open. What I do love about that sequence is that there's not a lot that you're doing on your hands or your wrists. There's really, you know, a lot of it is standing, which makes it immediately more accessible in some ways, I think, to musicians. And I fell in love with that practice, and I love how, there's a sense of safety knowing that you can go to any yoga studio and it's the same thing. And it wasn't until much later, actually, that I started drifting away from that and wanting to explore other kinds of movement, which I think are great. So how did you find Kripalu yoga, and like, how has your yoga journey kind of evolved since that time?
Oh, I mean, I was going to say, actually, I think that sequence it's a perfect, like, gateway yoga, because it is so repetitive. The postures, while they're not easy, they are relatively accessible and basic. Like, there's nothing too kind of crazy and twisty. They're all, and they say over and over, you know, even if you can only do the first stage of the posture, you're getting most of the benefits. So I think it is, aside from the heat, which is definitely not for everyone, it is a fairly inclusive physical practice, I would say. The attitude that accompanies it, not always so inclusive, which I think was one of the factors for both Melissa and I to start exploring elsewhere. So I think from that sequence, we tried vinyasa. I think we were both kind of frustrated with actually the total lack of alignment cues or mindfulness in a lot of the classes that we were attending. We were like, how does everyone know how to do this? Like, do we like miss the beginning of class where they explained how to not injure our wrists forever? We were very confused, but gradually we found our way to teachers who were really thoughtful and who used lots of props and who made sure to explain, you know, the biomechanics of a plank and an upward facing dog and all of that. And we got really into that as well. And actually we saw that with the right alignment cues, with the right guidance, actually being on your hands was perfectly safe, even for musicians. It's all about weight distribution and, you know, balancing yourself basically. I would say I found my way to Kripalu absolutely by accident. Actually, my 200-hour yoga training was meant to be in Hawaii, and that fell through for financial reasons, and Kripalu was what fit my dates. I had this spare month set aside. I Googled lots of things. Kripalu came up. I had heard of it, and funnily enough, I spent a few years of my childhood living very close to Tanglewood and Kripalu, so it did kind of seem quite serendipitous. And then when I got there, I actually lived with my amazing violin teacher's widow. So actually I did my training at Kripalu and then went home and like practiced in his old studio, which was very, very special. So it was absolutely the right place. But Kripalu yoga is, I would say, weirdly, the kind of basic sequence that they have all their teacher trainees go through and learn to teach, it's quite similar to the Bikram sequence. It's like bizarrely similar, the actual postures. And it's very much a hold and release hatha type of yoga. It's not flowy at all. So I was very familiar with the postures. I actually felt like I had a little head start with it. But the way in which it's taught and shared is so, like, could not be more different from the very militant, borderline abusive style that you often find in a Bikram class. So I actually learned as much about communicating and creating a safe space for students, like holding space for others, really, from my training there as my, you know, the asana practice itself. But yeah, and Melissa has a totally different training journey also.
Yes, so I did my yoga teacher training in Goa, India. And I also had a specific set of dates that I needed to have work for my training. And I had been speaking with a friend of mine whose sister had gone for a training at the school called Sampurna Yoga School. And she loved it. And so she was raving about the teachers and just how wonderful and how informative everyone was and what a great experience it was altogether. So I decided that's where I would go. Also, my older brother has lived in India now for 10 years. So India was a comfortable place and I usually would go anyways every year to visit him. So this time I just went to Goa and he came to visit me there. So that was quite nice as well. And so I showed up for this school and I had applied and I knew that it was going to be, I knew that it would be flow yoga. However, I also knew they taught Ashtanga yoga. And I thought, well, when I get there, I will let them know that I'm here for the flow yoga training. Little did I know, everyone did everything. So I got there and did my first Ashtanga class at 6 a.m. after arriving on a plane at 3 a.m. because yes, I was day late due to visa complications. Anyway, so I go and it's an Ashtanga practice and I had no idea what was happening. The teacher would say things and I was thinking, did I hear this correctly? You want me to put my knee where? Behind what? And so I was just looking around. Some people were very familiar with Ashtanga. Some people, it was also their first time. So then after that, I was thinking, oh my word, I don't know if this is for me. How am I going to learn to teach this if I don't even understand how to do it? And so at breakfast, of course, everyone was chatting and they're like, oh no, it's going to be fine. We'll do it. First of all, we'll do it so much, you'll learn it. I don't know if that made me feel better, but then the teachers were so wonderful. And so it's true. I actually grew to really quite like the practice and I wouldn't say I would teach it. I know how to now, but it's such a dedicated practice that people spend years studying and then actually going to study with gurus who then say you're ready to teach it and that sort of schooling. So anyways, I was very happy to have that practice in my practice. And so after my teacher training, I felt like I had a whole new vocabulary and a whole new sort of set of postures that were very helpful, again, with violin playing, and I was excited to be able to share them.
Oh, wow. I had no idea that you had done an Ashtanga training. That's a lot. That's intense.
Yes.
for listeners that don't know what Ashtanga is, you probably can explain it better than me, but my understanding is that it was a form of asana created as like a really acrobatic form of asana.
yes, that's right. And it used to only be practiced by young boys. So it also is a set sequence practice. And there are different levels. I don't know if you would call them levels, but different series, I think would be the way to say it. So the series A, you go and everyone does the series, the same postures. You might do them differently, but you go in the same order and you go up into the point where your body is ready to do the poses and you just continue on and you add on as your body starts to adjust.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I think every style of yoga that I've come across has had little like pieces of it that are like, oh, this is so great for musicians. And so like, I know for myself, when I was teaching yoga for musicians at Arizona State University, I would just kind of like take these little bits from different practices and combine them together. And I was wondering, is that kind of your own approach to intermission sessions? Are you heavily drawing upon one style of yoga over another, or is it much more about just like mindfulness?
I would say it's definitely a lot of mindfulness. We also feel that breathing exercises are extremely helpful to everyone, but especially musicians, right? And then we both love a very good alignment-based practice. So we feel like knowing how to hold our bodies well, how to stand well, how to activate muscles so that you actually can free up parts of the body is what's very helpful to musicians. So we both use different poses, whatever we would like to do from week to week, but we keep in mind what would probably be most beneficial to musicians. And we also like to ask if anyone has requests for certain body parts, strengthening, stretching, relaxing, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, in the interest of full disclosure, we actually were teaching yoga for musicians before we were technically certified. And I think we just drew upon, you know, if you do, for example, the Bikram sequence for like 8 years, pretty much safely guide people through some understanding of the postures. But I think we would mostly just sort of draw upon what we were exploring at that time, things that had really helped us, such as, and often it wasn't, you know, super active yoga. They could just be like standing really well or using a yoga block to engage the lower half of the body, and then, you know, miming, playing your instrument, just things that we had given a lot of thought to in our own practices, both on the mat and in the instrumental practice room. And yeah, I think these things shift with what we as individuals learn and what we are currently embodying. Yeah, we always want to hear from people, like, what do you need specifically? Like, is there a part of the body that's bothering you or feels like it needs strengthening? Could we experiment using the breath to help, you know, calm jitters or draw a deeper sound from your instrument? So, yeah, I think these things, like, shift definitely as the years go on.
I love what you said about getting a better sound out of the instrument, and that it's not just about avoiding injury with your practice, but it's about how do we create better sound? How do we become better musicians through the sense of body awareness? I really love that about everything that you're saying and putting out there, like on your Instagram and on your website. It just seems like you're fully interested in helping others become better musicians through this practice.
I mean, personally, like, I always felt that I was a natural musician and a natural communicator, but I never felt like I was a natural violinist, to be honest. I always was very jealous of these people who seem to have, you know, no physical impediments, and for whom the violin just, like, melted into the body and the arm seemed really free. I was like, how are they doing this? It feels so awkward for me. And it honestly wasn't until I started practicing yoga regularly that I learned ways for me, which of course, you know, this will differ for everyone, but just started to learn ways for me to invite the violin into my space rather than, you know, trying to accommodate it with my body. And you know, all the stretching, all of the mobility, all of the strengthening, it was helping me use my muscles in much more intelligent ways, much more efficient ways. I pretty instantly started needing to practice the violin a lot less because my muscles were just better behaved and, like, more responsive. So I didn't need to spend hours drilling something. It just, like, worked much more efficiently first time or second or third, you know. But so yeah, I think when I realize the power that yoga, and, you know, for us it was yoga. We tell people all the time, if yoga is not resonating with you, feel free to explore other versions of movement, whether it's martial arts or Alexander technique or running or swimming, just something that gets you to think about your body in a really compassionate way. Once I saw the effects of that practice on my musicianship, I was like, well, yeah, I want to tell people about this. This feels really good.
Absolutely. And also we talk a lot about how we spend so many hours in the practice room and we get really good at what we practice. So if we're in the practice room beating ourselves up, telling ourselves we'll never be able to do this, or we've got to wait until we're good enough to do that, then these are the things that are going into our muscles, into our minds as we're practicing our music, and that's what we're getting good at. And just a switch of the way we think. And so bringing in mindfulness and telling ourselves, actually, I nailed that slide. That was really beautiful. And I do this because I enjoy it. And I want to practice it this way because I would like to be able to communicate it this way, right? And so just starting to bring in a more, like Elena said, compassionate and positive way of practicing really does a huge number on what we take on stage when we perform for people. And so I think that's what we're both so eager to share. And it's been truly a passion, a project of passion to share this.
Yeah, I think a lot of musicians associate positivity with laziness. Like if you say something nice about your own playing, it means, you know, you've stopped, you're no longer interested in the quest for betterment. And actually, I think that's ludicrous. I think actually we usually are doing our best. Just like our best is not some unattainable goal. It's in fact, usually what is happening with the information and energy at hand. And I think, yeah, get like celebrating the victories as much as setting new inquiries or goals for ourselves. It's so important, and you can't really have one without the other. If your life is a series of like seemingly unattainable goals, then you're going to lose the joy, and then you're going to burn out, and then you're probably going to hurt yourself, and then you'll be sad because you're hurt. So yeah, it's really important to consider positivity in the grander equation of things.
I'm so glad you talked on that, because I just, you know, I mean, I think I can speak for a lot of musicians when I say, like, I'm very intimidated by both of you. I mean, you're incredible international soloists, and you both went to Curtis, and it's like, do you even have the same struggles that I do as a musician? And so I love how you spoke on the fact of, like, you know, releasing the negativity in the practice room, and that do you still struggle with things like perfectionism, and like, how does that kind of manifest? And is there anything from your yoga journey that's kind of helped you become more gentle with yourself?
Absolutely. Just today, I was working on my fourth finger vibrato. Thinking, little finger, what is it about this that you really don't want to do? And so starting to think, even about the smallest muscles. And so we have this huge goal of what we want to play and how we want it to sound and how we hope it goes, but really like starting to work from the smallest muscle with yourself, because ultimately that is who is delivering what you want to do. And then it becomes this, I think, this really fun project of working together collaboratively with yourself first, and then you get to make chamber music, if that's what's happening, when you perform. And so, yes, I still have the same, you know, working on intonation, working on legato, working on phrasing. We still work on the exact same things, but I would say we come to it from a much different perspective mentally, physically, emotionally even, and starting to practice that it's all okay. You know, learning from what doesn't go how you meant for it to go, but also knowing it was not actually a disaster. And at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is quite beautiful. And to our ears, yes, we've become perfectionists. I say we, not just Elena and myself, but like as musicians, right? But when we're playing for people, that's not what they're thinking. They're actually getting the joy. And so if we can start to practice and reinstate that joy in ourselves that probably brought all of us to our instruments, then it quickly becomes a more enjoyable experience in the practice room. Growing up, I did not like going to the practice room. Oh, I hated practicing. And now, even some days, I don't necessarily want to get my violin out of the case. But starting small and starting from a place of I can is a much easier way to get going.
Yeah, I would add to that, well, I can, and I wonder what this will be today, rather than, oh, today I have to do this, 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 here's my checklist. If I don't do this, I'm a terrible musician, I'm a terrible person. No, like, I think asking myself questions in the practice room has been a really helpful tool. Like, what can I explore in this phrase? Or can I make this sing more? Something like that, rather than this is what has to be done. I think that also encourages me to have a greater sense of presence when I'm practicing and performing. If you're constantly sort of mid exploration or mid inquiry, rather than like a pass fail mentality with every single note that goes by. I think also keeping in mind that when we are performing, you know, unless there are like real jerks in the audience, like most people go to a concert because they want, you know, to be moved or to have a positive experience. Very few people go attend a concert like hoping the performers will fail. And, you know, if they do, then that's really on them. That's their cross to bear. So I think just sort of practicing rewiring the brain, thinking that actually all of these people are on my side. And I did my first concert for for people, like with people in the room the other weekend. And I definitely got a little spooked. I was like, oh, I'm not just, like, weird things flashed into my mind. I was like, I've only been playing for microphones for the last year. Like, do I even remember how to, like, how loud to play above an orchestra? Like, how loud is, like, can you hear me? Like, I couldn't, there were so many questions that I had. And then as I went out there, honestly, I think I could have just, like, sat down and taken like a nap, and people were just like so excited to be in the concert hall. Granted, you know, it's been a light year in terms of concert going, but I think by and large, like, that is the general attitude of concert goers. They're really excited to be there. They've paid money to hear you, and they want you to do well. So I think that's important for us to remember. And then one more thing that a yoga practice has really helped me work out, both in organizing my practice and in performance. Let's take the Bikram series, for example, or any sort of Hatha yoga series. Let's say you do a posture twice, then it's time to move on. Literally just that. You've got two shots to do this, and then you move on and do something else. And if it doesn't go well, like, chances are for the rest of the class, you're not thinking like, oh, I really wish I could go back and do that standing bow pulling. But no, you've like moved on. You're doing a different thing now. And I don't know that I've ever come away from a yoga class being like, nailed it. That was a perfect standing bow. Like, did my, like, I accomplished my goal. I never have to do this again. I won. Yet, I think so much of our practice sessions are oriented like that. You know, we think we have to do something 500 times until we've won, like this passage, and it still might not go that well tomorrow. You know, you just never know. So I think the just letting things go without necessarily conquering them, like, you know, putting in a reasonable amount of work on something, and then just trusting that if I leave it will be there when I pick it up again tomorrow, just like my foot in a balancing posture. You know, I can play something a couple of times, try and be really present, attuned to what I'm doing, and then leave it. Like, it doesn't have to be one on any given day. You just have to trust that progress has been made.
Or trust that growth isn't linear either, that we have days where we might take a step back, but that's kind of part of it, as long as we keep showing up and being patient with ourselves, because it's not going to be perfect every single day, and it may never be perfect. But I think I definitely resonate with that, and I feel like yoga has helped me find a lot more self-acceptance with myself when things don't go the way that I had planned them to. And yeah, I just love that. I love that what you said about how, you know, we're in this pose right now, but okay, like what happened three postures ago doesn't matter because that time has passed. And that's so true when we're playing music too. Like if we start thinking about what happened before or what's coming up later, we lose sight of that sense of self-awareness in the moment, which is really what yoga is all about. When you come down to the core of it, it's really about that sense of inner self-awareness. Absolutely. That's so amazing.
Yeah. And I think that's basically fueled everything for us, you know, like our interest in yoga, just on its own, this increased sense of self-awareness, then what it's brought to our music making. And then, you know, trying to share that with people through teaching and our movement workshops and master classes where we talk about breathing and just, you know, being mindful. So yeah, that you nailed it.
Are there any, have you found that a lot of your colleagues who you thought would never try yoga have been showing up at any of your sessions, or are there any stories like that you can speak on?
Yes, absolutely. We have a dear friend who came to our very first retreat and has come every year since. And it's quite funny because this is a wonderful bass player, and he's a very type A personality. So he goes all in everything he does. So we come into the yoga room and he's sort of enamored by everything that's happening. And so we've now been at the retreat, let's say a couple days. And in the evening, we always have share time where we just gather in the living room of this house where we all stay. And over wine, we chit chat. And so a little bit into the conversation, he raises his hand as though he needs to. He definitely did not need to raise his hand, but so sweetly, we call on him. And he says, "This might be a little late, but what is yoga?" And we were like, "Well, you know, you did come to a yoga retreat, right?" He's like, yeah, I mean, I know. I signed up for it. But I guess now I'm just wondering what exactly it is. So he had never stepped foot into a yoga room. We had another friend there who had never stepped foot into a yoga room. And they were willing to take a chance and to try it out and to come be with all these musicians who wanted to find out how they individually could make a connection between a yoga practice and their music making. So it was a wonderful experience. Like I said, he came back, both of our friends who it was their first time doing yoga, they both came back. They came back with smiles, I should add. They came back with smiles on their own. We did not pay them to come back. But they actually enjoyed exploring all of the things that went through their heads and their bodies as they were doing this practice, and then how it grew them as people, and how it made them think about things they hadn't even thought of before, sort of just personal journeys, right? And emotional journeys, and how all of that works when we're being vulnerable as musicians, and what that means to then communicate that and feel like you have a safe space from where you can share all of these things. So the journey has been beautiful, and we've had friends who are willing to try it for the first time with us, and we're honored. And luckily, it's always been a wonderful experience.
Oh, that's so great. I love that. I always love hearing stories like that of people who are like, yoga's not for me, I'm not flexible, but then just become like the biggest fans of.
Yes. Yeah, we have to always remind people there's the saying of, you know, I'm too dirty, I can't take a shower. But really, the reason you would take a shower perhaps is because it might feel nice to be that clean if you're so dirty. And so the idea, a lot of people, we just see these pictures and we think that's what yoga is. And if you're not doing it that way, or if you don't look like that picture, then you're not doing yoga right, quote unquote. But
yeah. Or like it's somehow that's a prerequisite for yoga. I'm like, no. That is like one teensy tiny leaf on the branch of a whole practice. Like, there isn't an entrance exam into yoga in which you have to, like, be a pretzel. No.
And I think Elena and I have enjoyed, as instructors, making it as accessible for as many people as possible. And I think we both get good practice with our parents. My parents were definitely not yoga people. My dad, I'm still sort of working on, but you know, once my mom, getting my mom to just do one thing and then hearing her say, "Oh, that does feel nice." and then she'll say, "But is this yoga? I'm not convinced." "Yes, mommy, you're doing it."
Exactly. Stiram sukham asanam, you know, ease, foundation, asana.
Absolutely.
It's all about ease. That's what I think anyway, is that yoga is all about the ease and the gentleness and that sweetness that we find in some of the postures. What do you wish that musicians knew about yoga?
I really feel like if you really come to the mat, whatever type of yoga or intensity or school or variety, whatever sort of yoga you're doing, if you come with just a commitment to being present, I really feel that a yoga practice provides a mirror for whatever it is that you need to see. So, you know, if you're looking for something like quite physically intense, and you decide to invest your muscles in that way, and then you know, the payoff is this like unbelievable physical high. If what you need is just a moment to sit and reflect and be still, there it is. If you need deep catharsis, often that will come when you want it to, and also like when you least expect it. I think if you need to find a greater sense of ease or gentleness or compassion with yourself, there's a way to practice that also. So I think whatever it is that you are seeking or crave, I really do think that a yoga or even just, you know, a mindful movement practice, I think it can be, you know, that mirror for whatever it is you need to see.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. There it is, right there. And I think, I know for myself, I've had experiences at music festivals in particular where we're just expected to be playing our instruments from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m., 9 p.m., 10 p.m. sometimes. And not having any kind of way to digest everything that's happened, to find a way for movements that are counteracting the repetitive movement that we have when playing our instruments. And I think there is a need for music festivals that are these retreats that are really just about connecting with ourselves. And so I know you have a few retreats coming up this summer, is that right?
We do. Our retreats this summer are actually going to be virtual one more time.
Wow.
This is the last time. But we wanted to make them accessible for as many musicians as possible once again. It's been a hard time for musicians in so many ways, but we continue to feel like as a community, if we continue to show up for each other and be there for each other, that we'll be stronger on the other side. So just creating a space for community and allowing as many people who can participate to be there for each other would be a nice thing from all pockets of the world, which has been one of the silver linings of the pandemic, is that we have gotten to meet people from all over the world and connect, and that's so very special. Yes, so this year it'll be online one more time, August 20th through the 22nd, and we'll be putting out more information about all of that and what will be happening. But one more thing I was going to share about our retreats is that, you know, as musicians, we pour out and we give of ourselves day after day, night after night on the concert stage, teaching. It really takes so much to be a performer. And we don't often pause to think about what it is we need to be able to perform, to be able to be our best, and to be able to carry on in a way where we can feel strong and confident and happy with ourselves. And so what we wanted to be able to provide for musicians is a place where we can come and self-care. Like, self-care doesn't have to be selfish. In a way, it should be selfish though, right? Like, it should be a time where you think about what it is you need that's just for you, and that's a-okay. So trying to create a space where people can come and do what it is they need. Take a walk, have community, eat great food, drink delicious things, all the yoga, none of the yoga. We tell people, we're like, you're not forced to come to any of the classes. If you're sleeping in, that's your yoga and it's wonderful. So just let this be nice for you.
Yeah, I think musicians are weirdly reluctant to fill their own cups. So that's something we were once asked, like, what has been the greatest challenge with intermission? And Melissa rightly said, like, convincing other musicians that you are a worthwhile investment. Because it's something that is oddly not ingrained in us. More woodshedding, more performing, more concerts, more output. But we rarely think of, you know, the benefits of, like, a vacation or a retreat, whether it's our retreats or any retreat, just a place to retreat and nourish ourselves in whatever way we need.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I know I can speak for myself when I say the reason I found myself in hot yoga as a starting point was because I think I was looking for a practice where I could just kind of be really, you know, hard on myself outside of my time in the practice room, which I think was a reflection of that entire environment I had cultivated for myself and wanting to become a better musician. I thought that I had to meet myself with a stern negative attitude in order to get anywhere better. And so I love that you're just inviting in the total opposite, that you're like, hey, this is what you actually need to become better musicians, is a better understanding of yourself and connection with yourself and cultivating that gentleness with yourself. And if you need rest or if you need anything, like, you're welcome to find that.
Yeah. Also, if you need not to think about being a musician, like, please do that. Yes. I remember actually there was someone who at our first retreat, quite a few people were practicing for various things, auditions or performances coming up. He literally did not take his instrument out of the case the whole time. He was just like lying in the hammock, reading a book, loving the yoga. He hadn't really done yoga. He was like, I feel so good. Like, yes, great. You do you. We're allowed to, like, have time off from bettering ourselves as musicians also. Because I think actually a lot of people underestimate the magic that happens in rest. Rest is like an essential ingredient in the whole process.
It's true. And actually all of it goes into bettering ourselves as a musician, because then we have more to bring once we come back to our instruments.
Yeah.
But trusting the process, being okay with that.
Yeah. Not always feeling like activity is the way forward. Mm-hmm. That's a big lesson for me personally, actually.
Beautiful. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Should we share? We do a lot of yoga together, but we also really enjoy playing together. And so we'll soon be performing together over here in London at Wigmore Hall on Monday. But we're super duper excited because our album, this will be the first album that we're on together. So Elena and her husband have a beautiful music collective called Kaleidoscope Collective. And this will be the debut album for the ensemble. And so the actual release date is May 28th, and we'll be doing some publicity around it. But the album is called American Quintets, and it features works by Samuel Barber, Florence Price, and Amy Beach. So we're super duper excited about that. And I think, although it's not, I mean, we're intermission, and then we have a subtitle that's music, movement, mindfulness. So we always try to remember to share our music as well.
It's true.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. Oh, I can't wait to hear your album. Congratulations. What a huge achievement.
Thank you. Else, did I miss anything about it?
No, you nailed it.
Oh, sweet. Yeah,
it's a pandemic baby. We managed to rally the troops, and we recorded it in September, also over here in the UK. And yeah, we're very, very excited for it to venture out into the world.
Yes. Oh my gosh, congratulations.
Thank you. It's available actually for pre-order, and it'll be on all of the streaming sites. So wherever you like to hear your music, you can check it out.
That will also be a link to it in the show notes, along with all the ways that listeners can find you. I also just wanted to say, I love your app so much. I've been referring musicians from my classes to that app for the last 2 years, pretty much. Because oh, I just feel amazing. Like it's such a great resource for little exercises. Like you can do it in the practice room. You don't have to find YouTube videos and like try to track down things and listen to ads. It's just really convenient, I think, and accessible for pretty much every musician. So I really love your app, and thank you so much for creating that resource.
Thanks, Kim. That's so sweet of you. It's probably time to record some new videos.
I was just thinking like, ooh.
We'll get on it. It's not easy actually maintaining an app. But yeah. We're very happy to have it. No, we are very excited about it, and we do mean to share it with everyone. So thank you for that.
Oh, of course. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit subscribe, give us a rating, and follow on Instagram @TheAlignedMusician. Thank you so much, and take care.